You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. It's about 10 minutes past 7 o'clock now on this Friday, January the 12th. And we will get yet another perspective on President Bush's address to the nation on Wednesday night when he officially unveiled his new strategy for Iraq. We talked with a number of different guests yesterday about the address, but we didn't have someone yesterday who was a fierce critic, and we think we found one now. Matt Rothschild is our guest. He's the editor of the Progressive magazine. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. We talked with a guest at this time yesterday who was from the American Enterprise Institute. The American Enterprise Institute, considered by many as the crafter of this particular plan to increase troops to Iraq. Matt Rothschild joins us in the studio. Good morning.
Hey, Joy, I think I can fit that bill for you.
A fierce critic. Yeah. Well, what's wrong with increasing troops by 21,500, primarily to secure the neighborhoods of Baghdad?
Well, I don't think it's going to work. I mean, militarily, it's got a whole mess of problems with it. It over-relies on the Iraqi government and the Iraqi army, which has proven itself to be incapable of showing up for duty a lot of times. And so the idea that you can add 20,000 troops into Iraq when the United States already has 140,000 there, and that little marginal increase, augmentation, is what Condoleezza Rice called it, instead of escalation, would make such a big difference, doesn't make sense to me. And so, you know, they've got this terrible civil war there that, you know, when all the other rationalizations for U.S. presence in Iraq had fallen by the wayside, the weapons of mass destruction, Al-Qaeda and Saddam, what we were told by the Bush administration was we're there to prevent a civil war. Now, Bush on Wednesday night said, you know, we're there to stop the sectarian violence. Well, to me, that means we're there smack dab in the middle of the civil war. And there's no reason why U.S. troops should be there.
Now, it wasn't a big shock that he was going to call for this increase in troops to Iraq. We've heard that for many days, maybe even weeks. But there was one part of the speech that surprised many and hasn't been getting a lot of attention. You want to talk about Iran, man?
Yeah, I mean, to me, the mainstream media and most of the commentators missed the lead here, buried the lead, as we say in journalism. Everyone knew ahead of time that Bush was going to call for an increase of troops anywhere between 10,000 and 25,000. So there was no real news in that part of the speech. I mean, that had been known for weeks. But what hadn't been known was how belligerent Bush was going to be toward Iran and toward Syria. He mentioned Iran very high up in his speech, and several times he mentioned Iran and the dangers of Iran possessing nuclear weapons. So if you were just kind of a casual listener, you might have thought, wow, this whole thing is about Iran, because he placed so much emphasis on that. And then the thing that was even more disturbing to me than this notion of Iran getting a nuclear weapon and how bad that would be was a real echo of Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon, back in April 1970, escalated the Vietnam War into Cambodia, and by calling Cambodia a sanctuary and a supply route for the Viet Cong. And there were almost similar words in Bush's speech about Iran and Syria supplying routes to terrorists and sheltering terrorists who are involved in the war against Iraq. Here's the line. These two regimes, he said, are allowing terrorists and insurgents to use their territory to move in and out of Iraq. Iran is providing material support for attacks on American troops, Bush said. And here's the kicker. He said, we will disrupt the attacks on our forces. We'll interrupt the flow of support from Iran and Syria, and we will seek out and destroy the networks. Well, is he talking about seeking out and destroying the networks in Iran and in Syria? If he does that, there's going to be a regional war, and the whole place is going
to
blow.
Yeah, he announced the deployment of an additional aircraft carrier to the area and Patriot air defense missiles to the region. I heard a commentator yesterday, Pat Buchanan of all people, saying that this was trying to provoke Iran.
Well, they've had one provocative action after another against Iran, including yesterday in in Kurdish Iraq, where U.S. forces, against the wishes of the Kurdish government there and the Kurdish forces there, the United States swooped in on an Iranian consulate and grabbed some people. An abduction is what the Kurds say. Now, the Kurds are supposed to be our only allies left in Iraq, and even the Kurds were outraged at that. This is the second time that the U.S. military has seized Iranian diplomats. I have thought for a long time that George W. Bush was going to attack Iran sooner or later, and I'm afraid that it's going to be sooner now.
Yeah. We're talking with Matt Rothschild. He is editor of The Progressive, talking about the presidential address on Wednesday night when he told us what he wants to do with Iraq. He said he's already committed the 21,500 additional troops to secure Baghdad, and also 4,000 troops going to the western province of Anbar. Talking with Matt Rothschild about what's wrong with the president's new strategy, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Matt Rothschild this hour, editor of The Progressive. 1-800-642-1234 if you'd like to join in our discussion on the what's wrong with the new strategy toward Iraq as announced by President Bush on Wednesday. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Matt, it says here that Secretary of Defense Robert Gates is going to be in for another tough day on Capitol Hill. Gates will be appearing before the Senate Armed Services Committee one day after he and Secretary of State Rice got an earful from Democrats and Republicans over President Bush's new Iraq plan. One lawmaker called the plan for the troop buildup a tragic mistake. Another said it is the most dangerous foreign policy blunder in this country since Vietnam. And one of those was a Republican. Congress isn't behind President Bush on this.
No, and I think they're not behind the president on this one because the American people aren't behind the president on this. Poll after poll has showed great opposition to this escalation of the war, anywhere from only 11% of Americans were in favor of it to as many as 26%. But that still leaves three quarters of the American people at least opposed to this escalation. And if that is the sentiment, and I think it is, then senators of whatever party don't want to be bucking that tide. It was comforting as a citizen of Wisconsin to see Russ Feingold be so outspoken in his questioning of Condoleezza Rice, is saying what a grotesque error this was in foreign policy and demanding that, that Congress use the power of the purse.
Yeah, he says it's time to bring our troops home by stopping the funding. Do you think Congress will do that?
Well, I actually think the Democrats are going to be cute here, too cute by half, because I think even though Kennedy and Feingold have talked about using the power of the purse, and I believe those two mean it, I really don't think Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid mean it. I think they are floating the idea just to tell their base that, look, we're listening to you, Cindy Sheehan, and all you other people who want us out of there. But they're only going to put forward a non-binding resolution, according to what I've been reading, rather than move the legislation that would really defund this war, which is absolutely necessary. So I think they're going to try to have it both ways. They're going to be opposed to the escalation, but they're going to say, "Hey, Bush, this is your war. You're making the mess. Keep making the mess, and we'll score points politically." I think that is a very cynical and objectionable, morally objectionable course.
Yeah. I mentioned that I didn't talk to any fierce critics of the president's plan yesterday. We had mainly analysts and a supporter. But we did have a number of our Democratic congressional delegation join us for a few minutes during our 8 o'clock hour, and all of them were opposed to this and said it was the wrong idea and that there was going to be oversight and the president wasn't going to get a blank check. But voting not to fund the war, there's not much Congress can do about this. The troops are already committed. They're already on their way.
Yeah, but Congress has that obligation in the Constitution to fund armies and navies and defund armies and navies when it serves the nation's interest, and clearly it serves the nation's interest now. I thought Senator Obama had it right, and he says, at what point do we say enough? But the problem is with Bush's speech the other night is his rhetoric, his exaggerated, hyperbolic delusional rhetoric, which was a combination of fantasy and fear-mongering, left him no exit whatsoever to get out of Iraq.
Why? What do you
mean? Well, look.
Didn't he say if, Maliki, if you don't step up to the plate, you're going to lose the support of the American people?
Yeah, I think Maliki's already lost the support of the American people. But
he actually meant you're going to lose my support, didn't he?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he hedged that a little bit because he didn't say he's going to lose Bush's support or that the U.S. would leave. I mean, maybe what he was implying there was that, you know, Bush would try to destabilize that regime and get a new government in there that plays ball with Washington a little more closely. But listen to this rhetoric out of Bush's speech. Failure in Iraq would be a disaster for the United States. Mm-hmm. For the safety of our people, America must succeed. So what if the Maliki government and the Iraqi army don't cooperate fully? What if the Iraqi army battalions don't show up? Bush can't pull out, because the safety of the American people, by his own words, are in jeopardy here if the United States leaves. So that just commits the United States there forever.
Yeah, the defense secretary was questioned about this yesterday, and he was asked what happens if the Iraqi government doesn't come through as promised. And while he said that it's possible the administration might abandon the plan, he didn't really provide any details.
Yeah, I think all he said is it's failing, we'd have to relook at the strategy. The Iraq study group was pretty emphatic about this. Mm-hmm. If the Iraqi government isn't cooperating, if the Iraqi army isn't performing, the United States needs to leave. But we're not hearing that rhetoric from Bush. He's blocked that exit.
I'm going to give callers a chance. Steve in Madison, hi, you're on the air.
Well, I wanted to ask Matt what he thinks about this possible scenario. Cheney, Rove, Negroponte, and those central intelligence types are planning a super 9/11 to make us convinced that Iran and Syria have attacked us. And I think the antidote to this is to open up hearings on what exactly happened on September 11th, 01, and who planted the explosives that brought down the New York buildings. Thank you very much.
That's not what you said you're going to talk about, so I think I'm going to move on to another caller. Well, I'll let you talk about it. Do you think that the administration's going to do anything, especially with Iran and Syria, to make it look like they've attacked us?
Well, I think they're trying to provoke Iran or Syria to do something so there can be a Tonkin Gulf kind of a excuse for the United States to attack Iran and Syria. But do I think there'll be another super 9/11? And do I think the U.S. was involved in planting bombs at the bottom of those buildings in New York City? No, I don't. I'm not a believer in that 9/11 conspiracy.
Yeah. Chris in Mount Zion. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning, Joy, and thank you for having Matt on. Mm-hmm. Matt, I'm really curious. I heard on the CBC One that the United States in July had already been planning a move to what we'd say privatize the oil of Iraq, which is now in the hands of the Iraqi people, the funds. And I'm wondering, and what do you think? Is this escalation of troops maybe part of that? And what do you know about this privatizing the Iraqi oil? I'll take my answers off the air.
Well, Chris, I do think it's been the dream and the policy of the U.S. government since toppling Saddam Hussein to privatize Iraq's oil and to open up the oil industry there to ExxonMobil and other huge multinational oil companies. And the Iraq study group was in favor of that too, by the way, and that didn't get much publicity. I understand that the Iraqi government is redrafting its oil law, and I imagine that Maliki's going to be bowing to the pressure to privatize that, because when he was in Washington a few months ago, he said that was one of the things he was looking forward to doing. So, you know, it's interesting, Chris, on oil. For the longest time, the Bush administration wouldn't utter the word, that dirty little three-letter word, oil. But Bush mentioned it on Wednesday night. He said, we've got to stay there because we can't let radical groups have all that oil there and use that oil as leverage against us. So it wasn't supposed to be about oil, but ultimately a lot of it is about oil.
Yeah. Thanks, Chris. Mary in Fond du Lac is with us now. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I'm very, very concerned about the leader of our nation. We've switched gears so many times. Originally, we were pursuing Osama bin Laden, and then the false and misleading information about weapons of mass destruction. And now our leader is trying to help us switch gears again with concerns about Iran and Syria. He's gone way off task. And as a leader of our nation, we really need to be concerned about the behaviors that he's exhibiting as our leader. The misleading information and manipulative information in his speech again in trying to convince the American people to go on some whimsical fantasy of his again. Osama bin Laden, all of our energies now should be getting back to our original mission. And I'm also concerned about the damage he's done for our reputation with other nations now. It's going to take years to repair this.
Thank you, Mary. Reaction, Matt?
Well, I think Mary's right about the diversion from the real task, which was to go after Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden. Even yesterday, up on Capitol Hill, the leading intelligence figures for the U.S. government admitted that this Iraq war has helped recruitment efforts for Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. I mean, that is just a huge, huge confession to make. And then Mary talks about our reputation so besmirched by the Bush administration internationally. And Bush is just so detached. I mean, he's so out of it that in his speech, he said that there are millions of people in the Palestinian territories and in Lebanon who are rooting for the United States to succeed in Iraq. I just can't believe he's got a poll that backs up that assertion.
A lot of people, man, I wonder if you agree, this is more on than style than substance, were really commenting that that President Bush seemed to have the wind knocked out of him, that he was subdued. It was a kind of a bad speech. He didn't have the conviction that he's had in the past. What do you think?
Well, I don't know what to make about that. Mm-hmm. I mean, painted himself into a corner here, and he's got to know that he's getting advice from some of his military commanders that he's overruled now, that, you know, this strategy isn't going to work and it may be counterproductive, and still, you know, he and Cheney are going, you know, full steam ahead here. So he's got to be wondering, deep inside him somewhere, whether it's actually going to succeed or whether it's going to be a huge blot on his record. And then yesterday I saw that he was crying at a ceremony awarding a mom who lost her son over there, a Purple Heart. It's like Johnson in the end days of Vietnam. I mean, Johnson was really beginning to lose it there too. But, Bush thinks he's got God speaking to him. Yeah. He talked about God at the end. I mean, to me, he's got is a prayer. I mean, this thing wasn't a plan. The plan was a prayer, but then he did actually issue a prayer at the end that the author of Liberty, capital A, capital L, would provide for us.
We have just a minute before a news break, Matt, but he also said withdrawing now would result in unimaginable slaughter, that we can't withdraw now.
Well, and you know, of all the things he said, that was the one thing that tugs at me, because the risk is that it can get worse. Mm-hmm. And I don't have a crystal ball that says if the U.S. leaves, it's going to get better. But certainly it's pretty bad right now, and I do think the U.S. has made things worse and helped instigate some of the violence, and there's a possibility that it would go down if the U.S. left.
We will talk more with Matt Rothschild, editor of The Progressive, about the president's new strategy toward Iraq, the new way forward, as it's being called. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We'll get to more of your calls after the news. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's about 7:36 now on this Friday, January the 12th. Yesterday at this time, I talked with a guest who supported a surge of U.S. troops in Iraq. I talked with a guest from the American Enterprise Institute. Today, my guest says we should withdraw from Iraq. He's a critic of the president's plan as outlined on Wednesday. Matt Rothschild, my guest, editor of The Progressive. And Matt, it seems that most of the president's military advisors said don't increase the troops this way, don't do this. A number of the Iraq study group says withdraw. The American people say withdraw. The only group that apparently says do this is the American Enterprise Institute. Why is President Bush just listening to the American Enterprise Institute?
Yeah, and some of the very same neocons who got him into Iraq in the first place, like William William Kristol, who went on, you know, Jon Stewart the other night to say, this is the right strategy. Send more troops in, maybe even more than Bush wants to send in. I think it's part of Bush's megalomania and his sense that he's on this mission from God and that God wants him to liberate the people of Iraq and that he needs to do this mission and he can't leave this mission. Because God told him to do it. And also, he doesn't want to be a president who loses a war. That's why Lyndon Johnson stayed in Vietnam forever. He didn't want that on his reputation. And so even though all the, or most of the Pentagon generals were telling him more troops isn't going to help, more troops might actually make things worse, that's not what he wanted to hear. There was one report that in December, Bush went to the Pentagon and the generals laid out various strategies for finally getting out of Iraq. And he says, I don't want to hear how we're going to leave from there. I want to hear how we're going to win there. And the only people who came up with an idea for winning were, you know, William Kristol, the Weekly Standard, and the American Enterprise Institute. So I think he hauled their plan or their idea over to the Pentagon and said, you know, work this up, guys.
Yeah, we have a new AP poll taken after the president's address, apparently. Fully 70% of Americans oppose sending more troops to Iraq, and a similar number don't think such an increase will help stabilize the situation there. Does that surprise you?
It doesn't surprise me. The real question that it raises in my mind is, you know, do we have a democracy here? I mean, the people voted on November 7th to end this war. The people are voting in every poll to end this war, and yet this president was given a blank check by the Congress to start the war, and Congress keeps writing checks to the tune of, what, $400 billion already? And when all is said and done, it might cost us $3 trillion. The people want out. Everyone knows or reads about someone in their county who's been killed in this war, and I think in Wisconsin we have almost 70 people or more who have died. And we see the pictures on TV. We see that there's a civil war going on in Iraq. We don't understand why we're over there patrolling a civil war. Most Americans understand that, you know, this little plan of Bush's isn't doesn't have much chance of success, and that it looks like he's just going to send more troops in there to get killed. I mean, he had lurid language in his speech, Joy, on Wednesday night about how bloody it's going to get.
Yeah.
And that's not what the American people wanted to hear.
Yeah. Steve in Oshkosh is with us next. Hi, Steve.
Good morning to you both, and thanks. Matt, I wonder if you could enlighten me somehow. It seems to me the debate in this country still isn't even close to credible or serious. And what I mean by that is we have an overwhelmingly immoral action that I would liken to Germany's invasion of Poland in 1939. That wasn't to secure Germany. This war wasn't in Iraq was not to secure America. It seems to me the debate should be which prison George Bush and his crew go to and for how long. And should they face execution, though I'm not an advocate of the death penalty, and how do we make reparation payments? Should our soldiers serve prison time? And a surge, you know, I'm sure the German generals in spring of 44 debated a surge at the Eastern Front or at the Western Front, and the world said, who cares? You're going to prison or you're going to hang.
Well, Steve, I have spent a large part of my adult life resisting Adolf Hitler analogies, and so I'm going to resist this one. I don't think George W. Bush is Adolf Hitler. I don't think the United States is Nazi Germany. I do think George W. Bush violated international law by waging this war against Iraq. Kofi Annan, who was head of the UN, said the same thing. I do think Bush has committed war crimes, including in sanctioning torture. I do think he could be hauled before an international criminal court. I don't see that happening. I certainly am not for his execution. I wasn't for Saddam Hussein's execution. I'm not for anybody's execution. I do think the United States owes a lot of reparations to the people of Iraq, not only for this war, but for the brutal sanctions policy that killed, you know, 500,000 kids over there before the war started. So there's a lot that George W. Bush needs to be held accountable for. Donald Rumsfeld himself probably shouldn't be traveling to Europe anytime soon because, you know, a judge there or a prosecutor there could say he had committed war crimes as well. So, you know, there are serious offenses that these guys committed, but we don't need to slap the label of Hitler on them.
Next, we'll go to Bernie in Whitewater. Hi, Bernie.
Good morning. Good morning, Matt.
I wanted
to make a couple points. One is that I listened to the Larry King show on the night of the speech, and Larry had on Barack Obama and John Edwards and a couple other lawmakers, Republicans and Democrats, And I heard Barack Obama and John Edwards both use the verbiage along the lines of the Iraqi people need to step up. And I've heard this from various Democrats, et cetera, pundits, that they need to step up, that we're doing too much for them, they're too dependent on us, et cetera, et cetera. And I look at this thing and I say they are an occupied country. You know, Johns Hopkins says over 650,000 civilians killed since the U.S. Invasion, and that doesn't even count the deaths from the prior Gulf War and the sanctions, et cetera. Basically, they're an occupied country. They can't step up. The polls show that they want the U.S. troops out. We have no interest in democracy there, and I use we loosely, our government leaders that are doing this. I also hear people complain that their military, you know, their army isn't coming together. Well, if some other country came in and occupied the United States, I dare say that patriotic Americans would not be flocking to join up with this basically puppet regime. So if you could address that, and also the fact that the American people seem completely clueless as to the cost of this war, the economic cost, and the fact that it's just based on complete lies, and as the gentleman from Oshkosh mentioned, it seems so absurd that we're even having discussions about the legitimacy of our country even having its military there.
Yeah. Well, Bernie, you know, I'm glad you raised this bad metaphor that Bush officials use, Democratic senators are using about, you know, the Iraqi people, you know, they got to grow up, or as Rumsfeld once said, they got to lift their socks, pull their socks up as if they're, mm-hmm. you know, kids who are dressed improperly for grammar school or something. You know, this idea that the Iraqis are being ingrates also, you know, why, you know, look at all that we're doing for them. They're not helping themselves. Truth of the matter is the United States blew up that country, blew up the security system of that country. And when that happens, people revert to their neighborhood, their sect, their tribe, whoever can defend them from the lawlessness. Stuff happens. That's what Rumsfeld said, the lawlessness that was rampant that the United States let happen. And that's just human nature. I think we need to understand it as such. I mean, it's just way, way too late right now for the United States to achieve success or victory, as Bush talks about there. I mean, there may never have been a chance of success because occupations are so hard to pull off, but certainly within a month or two of having been there and then in the subsequent year bungling the whole occupation, there's no possibility. I mean, 61% of the Iraqis believe it's okay to kill Americans. I mean, how are we going to win that way?
Yeah. Are the Americans clueless as to how much this war costs?
I think that's the one thing Americans probably know more about. They probably can't figure out the exact dollar amount that it's mm-hmm. costing us. $2 billion a week, by the way. But I think that hits Americans hard. I mean, we've always been told that we don't have money in the budget for the things that we need here, universal health care, free college education, eliminating poverty and hunger in this country. But there's always $2 billion a week. There's always $3 trillion total for some reckless war that the president wants to wage against a country that was not a threat to us.
Matt Rothschild is our guest. He is the editor of The Progressive. He's telling us what's wrong with the president's new strategy for Iraq, as unveiled in that address to the nation on Wednesday night. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's about 14 minutes before 8 o'clock. Coming up after 8, it is the Week in Review. We'll talk more about the President's address about Iraq coming up in our Week in Review. Right now, Matt Rothschild, our guest, editor of The Progressive. Our next caller for him is Mike in Appleton. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Yes, ma'am. Good morning. Mm-hmm. I have a comment and then two very quick questions. I believe that it was correct to go into Iraq, but for none of the stated reasons. That's number one. Number two, I would ask your guest, what do we do with Iran? And please don't say negotiate. You can't negotiate with them. But my third question, and the one that I really think is important, is do you people who are in the media feel any responsibility about the troops that we have on the ground there and the idea of bashing constantly? It doesn't matter that you're bashing Bush. It's the image that we're portraying to our troops who are on the ground. Do you feel any responsibility?
Hold on, Mike. I'm going to say that we talk with guests from all sorts of different perspectives, so if you were listening yesterday at this time, you would have heard a guest who was a full supporter of this particular plan, Mike. But has this hurt the troops, Matt, for us?
Oh, I don't think so. You know, bashing the commander-in-chief is not the same as bashing the troops. Opposing the war doesn't mean you oppose the troops. The troops themselves not only want to get themselves out of there, but think all U.S. troops should be gone within a year. 70% in a Zogby poll earlier this year said the best thing for the United States to do is to pull all U.S. troops out. So I'm saying what a majority of U.S. troops want to say. I also think for people who oppose this war, we are really in the troops' best interest. We are trying to get them out of an impossible situation there where more than 3,000 U.S. soldiers have been killed, where more than 22,000 U.S. soldiers have been wounded. And to say those of us who oppose the war and don't want any more than to get killed or wounded is somehow against the troops doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, there was a lot of Republicans in the president's own party are expressing doubts about this plan. I'm looking here. Norm Coleman, a Minnesota Republican, said that while he doesn't want to embarrass the president, his position is clear. I do not believe a surge in troop is going to solve the fundamental problem we have.
Chuck Hagel, too, from Nebraska, Vietnam vet, has been very outspoken.
Iraqis have to decide they're going to stop killing themselves, he said. So that was Norm Coleman, a Republican, saying that. What about what do we do about Iran, Matt? Mike says, please don't say negotiate.
Well, I don't want to say go to war because I don't think that's going to solve anything. Look, the idea that Iran is this monolithic far-right threat to the United States is not accurate. There is a lot of democracy movement going on in Iraq right now among students, among human rights activists. Shireen Abadi is Nobel Prize winner from Iran. She's been involved in a reformist feminist movement in Iran. The idea that Iran is just some monolithic bad country that we need to attack is an image that people have in their minds that just doesn't really recognize the reality there. There was an election not for president there recently, but for sub-levels, and Ahmadinejad's party got whipped. So there are possibilities there of reform within Iran, and the idea to be more belligerent, which was Bush's idea on Wednesday night, and to widen this war from Iraq to Iran to Syria, I think is madness.
Yeah. Now, what I was hearing discussed on this one cable show with Pat Buchanan was that he thought the U.S. was trying to provoke Iran to somehow strike at U.S. troops and then giving the U.S. the excuse to send missiles to strike Iran's nuclear facilities. Is that what you're thinking, too?
Yeah, I do. I mean, Seymour Hersh has been writing The New Yorker now for more than a year about the desire of the Bush administration to attack Iran. And beyond the desire, the actual placing of special forces inside Iran to prepare for an attack there. So I am very saddened to say that I'm sure that Bush wants to attack Iran and will probably attack Iran before he's out of office.
Yeah. American troops backed by attack helicopters and armored vehicles raided an Iranian diplomatic office in the dead of night early Thursday and detained as many as six of the Iranians working inside. So what was that all about?
Well, it's just another provocative action. It's the second of its kind where the U.S. military seizes a consulate or an official Iranian diplomatic post and grabs, six or seven people. And they're trying to really, tweak Iran's nose and see if it'll respond so that Bush has his excuse to broaden this war. I mean, he said in a speech Wednesday night he's going to go attack the supply routes from Iran and from Syria. If people don't take that seriously, this is a widening of the war. This is going after Cambodia and the sanctuaries in Cambodia. I mean, that's what happened during Vietnam, and I think Bush is going to do the same thing right here.
Yeah. I said that we spoke with a supporter of the plan to expand, escalate, augment the war yesterday. But, he was saying that this is not, the American Enterprise Institute is not saying this should be a temporary surge in troops. The American Enterprise Institute thinks that this increase in troops, these troops need to be staying there for a very, very long time.
Well, and the U.S. military officials said last week that it's going to take 2 or 3 years. I mean, the idea that there's going to be some momentary surge and that the Iraqi government by November is going to have control of the whole territory is just ludicrous. That's fantasy land. The Iraqi government has no power to to control its whole government, to control its whole territory. The Anbar province is lost, and the idea of sending 4,000 more troops into there, where there are more than 1,200,000 Sunnis who despise the United States, as though that's going to help. I mean, that's a bad joke, too. I mean, Bush's strategy and Bush's rhetoric is going to keep more than 100,000 U.S. troops there until, you know, January 20th at 11:59 in the morning, year 2009.
Barb in Madison is with us now. Hi, Barb.
Hi. I would just like to ask, first of all, what this guest's opinion of what our goal should be there. Bush is saying his goal is stability in the Middle East. As far as I can see, in Iraq and probably the surrounding area, oil and religion are two huge issues that need to be addressed. And the generals the other day that were interviewed right after his speech said we should be getting, employing the nations that surround Iraq to be more active in this. And that probably, in my opinion, they understand the issues better than we do. And I'm just wondering, if we pull the troops out or leave them there, what's the goal and how do we accomplish it? And is, should our goal be stability there?
Yeah. Why is this victory so important to President Bush in Iraq, Matt?
Well, I think it's important for him for reputational reasons. I think it's important because of the oil there. I think it's important because he's put so much stock in it right now. But, you know, some goals are unachievable. And it makes sense to scale back when you understand rationally that that goal is unachievable. And the goal of the U.S. victory in Iraq is clearly unachievable right now. And so we need to face that fact. And we need to bring those troops home. I mean, we need to stop increasing the recruitment efforts for al-Qaeda, which the U.S. presence there does. We have to stop killing U.S. soldiers and wounding U.S. soldiers and stop killing Iraqi civilians over there. And the goal should be to let, you know, the Iraqis solve their own problems.
Yeah, and you don't buy that we need to have a stable Middle East and a democratic, free democratic Iraq would be a step toward that?
Well, I'm for freedom and democracy everywhere, but the idea that you can implant freedom and democracy by an F-16, it's just kind of a weird surgical tool to use.
Tim in Sparta is with us now. Hi, Tim.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, at first just wanted to say I thought it was offensive, and the propaganda of your guest by saying that President Bush speaks with God or God told him to go to war, and that making him sound like he actually speaks with God and is a religious, basically a religious freak is just not the case, and it is propaganda. And the one point I wanted to make, and I think John McCain said it best, is this is not Vietnam. People like Zarqawi, they are dead today. When our troops leave, people like that are going to follow us home if we don't finish the job. And the blood that will be on the Americans' hands of a terror attack, a massive terror attack that happens in the United States as a result of Iran getting nuclear weapons and sneaking a dirty bomb or something into America because we decided to cut and run is going to be on the progressives' hands.
Matt.
Well, Tim, I am prepared to bear responsibility for what happens if Iran gets one nuclear weapon when the United States has 10,000 nuclear weapons. The idea that Iran would attack the United States either directly or with a handoff, which would be easily seen, doesn't make sense to me. So I don't believe Iran, even with one nuclear weapon, represents a threat to the mighty U.S. government. Now, this idea that I'm just spewing out propaganda here about Bush and his theological beliefs and conversations. Bush himself said, according to negotiators in the Israel-Palestinian conflict, he told them, this was in an Israeli paper, that God told me to go to war against Afghanistan, and God told me to go to war against Saddam Hussein in Iraq, and now God is telling me to make peace between you guys, Palestinians and Israelis. There are a lot of quotes from Bush in the Woodward book about him speaking with God and speaking to a higher father than his own father. And when he gave a speech after 9/11, his speechmaker said, you know, you were great there. And, you know, Michael Gerson said, you know, I think God wants you to be where you are. And Bush responded, God wants us all to be where we are. And so I'm not making this stuff up. This is Bush's idea. He has talked about being the delivery boy for God, who he thinks is the author of liberty and wants to bring freedom to the people all over the world. And the U.S. is delivering that gift of freedom, but it's not our gift of freedom to deliver. It's the gift of God Almighty. I mean, that's in a lot of his speeches. You can go to whitehouse.gov and look it up.
Yeah. You know, we only have a minute to go, Matt, but I've said that just the American Enterprise Institute and you said the Weekly Standard are the only people who support this particular plan. John McCain, our caller points out, also wanted an upsurge or an increase in troops.
Yeah, I am so puzzled by John McCain on this. I mean, I would think a guy who was in Vietnam, saw the problem of Vietnam, was a prisoner in Vietnam, and understood what happens when the United States fights a war with 70% of the American people opposed to the war, how he can then turn around and say, we got to get more troops in there. That's baffling to me. I do think it may have some political reasons because he's wanting to get that Republican nomination, but it doesn't make any sense.
Well, we'll leave it there for now, and we'll talk to you again soon, I'm sure. Thanks a lot, Matt, for coming in.
Thanks, Joy. My pleasure.
Matt Rothschild, editor of The Progressive, and a frequent guest of our Friday Week in Review, which is coming up next with two other guests. We'll have Matt on the Week in Review, I'm sure, in the very near future. Thanks to Karen Prager for producing this hour. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.